Well, hi, friends. And we are nearing the end of the book. We're not too far away, just maybe 7 or 8 pages. And I'm glad that is the case. Then, of course, as I said, we have to resume with the beginning of externalization of the hierarchy. I don't know what possessed me to dive into it. In a more modern moment, let us say, but there are some things that have to be taken care of in the first 50 or 60 pages of the book. So at least we'll finish this and you'll be in a position to utilize it, and then I'll carry on further. There's so many of DK's books that it would be wonderful to discuss. And I've discussed some of them or written commentary on them. And we've been dealing with purification, you know, the purificatory process, discovering the tainted area and discovering healing magnetic areas, I suppose, on the earth, and withdrawing the attention from the source of difficulty and using, concentrating upon certain mantric usages, because mantrams will be found to be a healing method. And then finally, the fourth point is withdrawing of the purifying energies and stabilizing all that has been accomplished. So this is something for us really to study, because we're always going to find, at least at our stage, areas within us that need purification without excessive attention to them. You know, we don't want to become overly engaged with the areas of purification, just doing enough to help. So DK goes on page 693. I have worded all this in such a manner that it will be evident that the work to be done is not confined only to humanity, but also to the forms of life in the other kingdoms of nature. So the kingdoms are, you know, interdependent, no question about that, and mutually supportive. We know that man gives to the plant and animal kingdoms, but they give to him as well. And that might even be said of the mineral kingdom also. The study of the science of applied purification is one which is engrossing the attention of all the ashrams at this time, disciples in the first ray ashram and the second ray ashram and in the seventh ray ashram are peculiarly active along these lines. For the destruction of evil is the work of the first ray, and in so destroying its effects, purity are achieved. Very interesting. The fostering of good then becomes possible and is the work of the second ray. So when we speak about the will to good, there is the second ray involved in that, and goodwill. Maybe the will to good is a combination of the second ray and first, and goodwill of the second ray and third. So the fostering of good then becomes possible and is the work of the second ray, of the builders, that is. And the bringing of spiritual energy into contact with substance and consequently with matter is the unique work of the seventh ray, because it is now in manifestation. I mean, we've been told that although Master R, as the Maha Chohan, basically has a very large third ray ashram, he's concentrating at this time upon the seventh ray. So disciples in the first ray ashram, in the second and the seventh, are at work and are peculiarly active. along these lines. For the destruction of evil is the work of the first ray. And in so destroying, its effects, as it were, comma, purity is achieved. So we'll use our red here, indicating more than just the first ray, but oftentimes when the first ray is being referenced, red is good. The fostering of good then becomes possible and is the work of the second ray of the builders. Okay. And the bringing of spiritual energy into contact with substance. What is this word substance? Well, it means, in this context, etheric energy, largely, into contact with substance and consequently with matter is the unique work of the seventh ray because it is now in manifestation. So those three rays, which are so important in the New Age, are active in this applied study of this science of applied purification. And it is engrossing the attention of all ashrams at this time, and probably now as well, even though it's 70 years later. The rays which are active and in manifestation, let me just check that I'm in good shape here, I think so. The rays that are active and in manifestation at this time and in this cycle are there in conformity to the plan and in preparation for the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. These rays are particularly involved, 1, 2, and 7, I guess, and therefore the initiates and the disciples in the ashrams of the masters are also particularly implicated. Well, we know that ashrams 1, 2, and 5, and also 3, and 7, and another secondary ashram are involved in the preparatory, initial and preparatory work. So the seventh ray ashram is not discussed per se except as a subset of the third ray ashram of Master R, who is concentrating upon the seventh ray, and more the seventh ray souls will be coming in, and we will have, with that coming in, a real change in substance and matter, a reorganizing of the physical plane altogether, and that does have to happen. The cleansing of the ethers has to happen before the attack upon world glamour can be as successful as it must be. The science of applied purification is also the science of applied energy, seems to suggest then the fifth ray, with the specific objective in view of eliminating the undesirable and that which hinders the entrance of the light and thus providing space and entry for the desired, for the good, the beautiful, and the true. Another one of those old commentary quotations, I don't think the particular master responsible for that is indicated. The science of applied energy. Well, you know, we're learning more and more under the fifth ray as it is applied to occultism, about how to apply energy. There are mantras which are involved in that. The fifth ray mantra, you know, it talks about energy itself, am I, is a good one. That's in that series with I still persist, and not is but me, and the worker and the work are one. And the fourth ray mantra, I'm forgetting it at the moment, but you can look those up. Energy itself, am I? Let's see if I can, you know, I end up having to find what I discuss, what I bring up. Okay, so I'll bring this down. And we'll do it this way. No. That's when you have two. I still persist. Okay, and now let's keep moving. There it is. Yes, the beauty and glory veil me not. I stand revealed. I am. That's the for the souls on the fourth ray. And then I mastered energy, for I am energy itself. The master and the mastered are but one. Maybe I will... take a look there so you can see two. And we have here ray six. I am the seeker and the sought. I rest. And I, the creator, am. The creative work is over. I, the creator, am. Naught else remains but me. But the one we're talking about here is especially this. I mastered energy, for I am energy itself. The master and the mastered are but one. I don't have a way of, I don't think I have a way of getting orange here. I would like to have orange, but I just don't see it. And that would be, well, maybe indigo or blue would serve, because we do have, No, I'm not going to be able to get that. Okay, so that's okay. Apply. I really have, the indigo is considered the esoteric color of the fifth ray, and that's one of the preparatory ashrams particularly upon which we can focus. It's doing much of the preparatory work along with the first ray ashram and the second. Okay. In the application of this science, there is no infringement of the human prerogative of free will. This ancient science is concerned primarily with the purification and with the redemption of matter, and it is entirely in the hands of human beings under the direction of the hierarchy. And this direction may be consciously or unconsciously registered. So I can't get all the colors that I would use, but at least we understand that this science of applied purification is focal at this point. The science of applied energy, it is called as well. And probably there's still much purification to be undertaken before the Christ can really reappear. I mean, think of the sharing that has to be done. That requires a renunciation or a purification from selfishness, peace that is required before the Christ can come. This requires a suspension of the tendency in the fourth kingdom to fight and to engage frictionally with one's fellow human beings. And then, of course, there is the house cleaning, which is purification itself. Those are the three necessities before the Christ can gauge that it is wise to reappear. The science of redemption, to which I have several times earlier referred, is in reality the applied art of esotericism and of spiritual living, which is already being taught to mankind. Art of esotericism and spiritual living. They are steadily learning, human beings are, to redeem the bodies through which they function. It is in reality the art or science of relationship between the life and the lives, as H.P.B. expresses it. So already this redemption is on the way. And what can we say here? Okay, and my hope is that I'm working with the right, I am. So, what do we have? The science of redemption, the science of applied purification, and the science of applied energy. Okay, so let's look at that and see if this is correct. We are discussing three sciences. The science of applied purification. The science of applied energy and the science of redemption, all interrelated. It depends on how we're handling the energies which we receive and which we call for. Okay. As far as the other kingdoms in nature are concerned, the purification is applied by the hierarchy through the medium of human beings. And this can be seen in process at this time. You know, Luther Burbank, in relation to the plant kingdom, and the many people who are trying to salvage and promote the advancement of animal populations in danger, endangered by poachers. And there was an Indian scientist, Bose was his name, and he investigated the mineral kingdom in terms of its livingness. These are people who are probably under the inspiration of hierarchy and are working with the different kingdoms, the lower kingdoms. There's not much we can do to promote the advancement of the higher kingdoms. They are in that relationship to us. They promote our advancement. So this present activity carried on now largely unconsciously will be redoubled and carried forward consciously by trained initiates and disciples working through and with aspirants, just the way, you know, in the laws of service, it's those who have a certain soul ray who are able to work with and through those whose personality ray is the same as the soul ray which they have. It is this that is now being studied in the various hierarchical ashrams, and when applied after 1975, will bring about great and important changes in world living. Now, do we see that yet? Well, certainly the computer revolution has a lot to do with being able to work with the mineral kingdom and with the factor of electricity. But it is the hierarchy that is working through human beings to raise the levels of these other kingdoms. Okay, these are all matters to which the hierarchy is attending in its preparatory work. Another matter to which the hierarchy is at this time attending in view of the coming adjustments required is the discovery of aspirants and those who are close to accepted discipleship in all lands, in order that the language problem will present little difficulty. And now we have devices which instantly translate one language into another, useful in conversation and mutual understanding, and the translations are reasonable, so that the old effect of the, whether it's real or mythological, Tower of Babel will be set aside. Those difficulties in communication will be set aside. And the more aspirants and disciples there are speaking the various languages, including English as a more universal language, the easier will be the communication. But as I say, the devices now promoted, advertised, can help immensely. Okay. Having discovered such people, their next step is to, the hierarchy's next step maybe, is to subject them to a process of training in telepathic susceptibility so that they will be sensitive to hierarchical impression. At the same time, their intuition will require stimulation, but as the intuition is useless and inaccessible without a high-grade intelligence, all these people must be sought for upon mental levels. That's interesting. The possession of the abstract mind is not sufficient. It is useful in that it guarantees the ability of the aspirant to construct the antikarana. It is nevertheless quite possible to possess a well-developed abstract consciousness and yet to be quite devoid of intuitive perception. Now that's kind of a red-letter statement when it comes to making the discrimination between the abstract mind and the intuition. Anyway, the intuition must be cultivated, and the hierarchy knows means of cultivation. The study of symbols is one of those means. The training in telepathic sensitivity. I think I'll use a more mercurial color. There's no real consistency in these colors I'm using, but sometimes there is some kind of congruence. The intuition is useless and inaccessible without a high-grade intelligence. Well, you know, when we read the works of the medieval mystics, they seem to have had the intuition, but maybe there was difficulty communicating what they touched because the mind was not there, having undergone a sufficient development, maybe especially the abstract mind. Of course, there were those for whom that did not apply. I'm thinking about the mystical occultist Meister Eckhart that D.K. talks about as a mental disciple. He seems to have had both, and both are necessary. At the same time, the intuition is useless without a high-grade intelligence. So for a while, we will be in training to develop the abstract mind and the intuition to some degree, maybe 2,000 years of developing the abstract mind in the sixth subcategory of the fifth root race, the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race. Now, D.K. maybe is going to speak about a specific disciple, and coming under the name Z, we don't really know who that is, but it's kind of an example, I think. Look. No, that's not it. This is it. Okay, for example, this is the major limitation of Z. He is a sound abstract thinker, and they are somewhat rare, being usually impractical idealists. He is not, however, the least intuitive as yet. He could easily be, given certain needed surrenders. Well, we don't know the individual involved, but we can gather the principle, and we can also understand that for the people for whom D.K. was writing, Z probably was known to them. So it is possible to seal off the intuition from the abstract mind, or vice versa. It is possible, you know, there are philosophical abstract thinkers who are not really touching the immediate straight knowledge and truth that the intuition reveals. They are caught in their own abstract thought forms, which under many circumstances do not reveal the truth as the intuition would reveal it, the straight knowledge of the intuition. Basically speaking, the intuition is not the revealer of esoteric truths. They come along another line of spiritual perception. The intuition is essentially the organ of group perception, and that which eventually elevates the personality to its rightful position as the agent of the soul in the group. Well, you know, we have to understand what it is that pure reason reveals. But it is interesting that D.K. is hinting here or suggesting that esoteric truths come along another line of spiritual perception. Now, is he classifying the subplanes? We don't meet the intuition until we reach the fourth subplane. Let's see if I can get this here. Yes, this fourth subplane of the Buddhic plane is that upon which the intuition can be found or upon which it begins. And let's see, there is also this one, which is prepared by Keith Bailey. And we see that on the Buddhic plane, intuition is number four. Let's see if I'm getting that properly. Looks like I am. And divine vision, number five, healing, number six, comprehension of the four sounds, number seven. So it may be that what we're calling the intuition, even though we often call the Buddhic plane the intuitive plane, what we're calling the intuition doesn't really begin until fourth subplane vibration is achieved. And we do know, however, that pure reason is found as well upon the Buddhic plane, and that pure reason reveals in all truth many intricate relationships. So that is something to bear in mind as well. Now, let's see. Okay. So intuition, he says, is not the revealer. It comes along another line of spiritual perception. He doesn't specify what that is. Is it pure reason? The intuition is essentially the organ of group perception, and that which eventually elevates the personality to its rightful position as the agent of the soul in the group. So in order for soul infusion to really occur, the intuition seems necessary, seems as a necessity to be involved. He goes on about Z. So, you know, there's probably a lesson in this for everybody, I suspect. Z has a sound theory as to group attitudes and group work, and he will be exceedingly surprised at these comments of mine. Is he a member of the Tibetans group? I don't recall anybody with the initial Z, but maybe I'm just not recalling. But as long as he insulates himself from warm group contacts and fails to seek in the name of service the love of the group, I mean, is he talking about Regina Keller with her first ray astral body? And as long as he fails to recognize error and his own part in any current mistakes, whenever they occur, and as long as he transfers responsibility to others when he himself is to blame, he will fail to register intuitive information. So, kind of a group love and group warmth are required, because his personality reactions will intervene. He must not, this is almost like a letter of instruction to this disciple Z, but it's being brought to the group. for their consideration. And of course, many other people would read it too. Eventually, he must not be deceived by the fact that people like him on the platform. Is he a lecturer? That is group work, but not essentially working with the group. He must learn that at present he is the onlooker at the group, and as yet is not a part of it. Interesting distinction, is it not? That he can look on the group and be involved in a type of group work which is not really work with the group. And that he is primarily focused on delivering the goods, if I may use your American phrase, to his personality. Delivering the goods to his personality and its acclaim, and not to the group. He's somehow caring very much about the reaction of others to him, and is not maybe participating in his own group as an agent of elevation and advancement of his own group. This will be hard for him to realize, and he must be given time. He wants to make good spiritually and esoterically, but needs to grasp the fact that this is done through love and understanding and not through the intellect. Is it someone that does not have the second ray and has more of the third? Well, we see how Master DK has veiled the identity here. He is insulated by his own strong desire to make good, according to his own theories and to his personality, thus proving to himself the grasp his soul may have over that personality. This creates barriers, but the insulating and separating wall between him and his co-workers is very thin and could easily be rent in twain. Now that's the phrase that takes us back to the action of the Christ, rending the veil of the temple in twain, making a rent, a big rent within the veils of Maya, and taking us back basically to chapter 10 in the rays and the initiations, where the lawgiver Moses made a rent in the veil, and St. Paul, Paul as the disciple, made a rent along the first ray line. So the veil is very thin and could be rent in twain if his pride would permit, and if he would descend to a recognition of equality with all the group with whom he is associated. I guess he feels somewhat mentally superior. It's a problem of the third ray, and maybe some types on the more mental aspect of the second ray. Contempt for the limitations of others, especially the mental limitations. And even with the most unimportant members of that group, this he does not yet do in spite of what he believes about himself. It's so interesting that Master DK would interpolate this lengthy discussion of Z and his problems at this point. You know, since he has been writing in general about hierarchical and basically group issues, now he's focusing on an individual who has a theoretical attitude toward the group, but not a living participatory method of working with the group. Well, maybe we can learn a little something from this, even though we don't know his rays. It seems like, you know, one of the mental rays has to be involved, and maybe for the sake of isolation, something of the first ray. I'm remembering he spoke to RSU, Regina Keller, about her lonely, isolated first ray astral body. And she had lots of the third ray too. But was she the onlooker at the group and as yet not part of it? Well, we're not going to know this. But we do know that the person, as a lecturer on the platform, was seeking some kind of personality validation. It may have come to him, maybe not, but that's not the same as real participatory group work. Okay, that is an interesting interpolation. The searchlight of the hierarchy is sweeping the planet at this time. Sometimes when you look at the 12 different types of zodiacal light, the image of the searchlight comes up. You know, pages 329 and 330 in esoteric astrology, I think you'll find something here, or something there that is here suggested. The searchlight of the hierarchy is sweeping the planet at this time, singling out men and women here and there from the mass of men. They indicate esoteric possibility, and in their lives, love of humanity and love of the Christ is a basic and fundamental factor. It's a real necessity, isn't it? If they are to be singled out for real usefulness in this work of promoting effectively the divine plan. Yeah, I'm not going to go to esoteric astrology. You'll see the 12 different types of light. And it might even be Aries, you know, that is involved. Of course, I say one thing and apparently do another. And it's hard to refuse. It's hard to refuse the chance. Here it is. It's not the searchlight of the hierarchy, it's something greater. Aries, the light of life itself. Well, let me get it so you can read it. I'm hoping that this is it. Yeah. The light of life itself. This is the dim point of light found in the center of the cycle of manifestation. At the center of the cycle of manifestation, faint and flickering. It is the searchlight of the Logos, seeking that which can be used for divine expression. So there is the link. There is the link. And let's see if I can, I'll put it in red since it's Aries. Okay. All right. The ordinary devoted person who constantly pledges and dedicates himself to the Christ, to the Masters, in a spirit of adoration, will not be chosen for this specific training. The searchlight will not indicate such a person. Their own attitudes and development come violently between them and their objective. Now, it does seem that he is speaking of the sixth ray type. The man who forgets about himself and who is more interested in helping unhappy human beings, but who is nevertheless staunchly convinced of the factor of the unseen worlds, is the man for whom search is at this time being made. Okay. So, it's a difference. The ordinarily, conventionally devoted religious person is not chosen. So that gives us a chance to, you know, examine our own approach. All right. The man who forgets about himself and who is more interested in helping unhappy human beings, but who nevertheless is staunchly convinced of the factor of the unseen worlds, is the man for whom search at this time is being made. And I imagine the search is still going on. I imagine that to be the case. It's a question of love or devotion. And devotion has within it certain selfish, self-centered attitudes, although it is useful at the second initiation, whereas love is far more selfless and generous. When these men and women are found, the work of the discovering initiate is to see to it that information comes to the aspirant in some form or another anent the hierarchical plan concerning the reappearance of the Christ under some name familiar to the aspirant's religious background, and about the fundamental and needed occult truths, with particular emphasis upon the law of cause and effect, and secondarily upon the law of rebirth. So, a discovery is made by a searching initiate, and then certain types of information have to be delivered to the one found, to the one discovered. So the law of karma, cause and effect, and the law of rebirth. These are important doctrines that help clarify the role of any eager aspirant. And we also have the necessity of helping them learn the constitution of man and the next step ahead. Karma, rebirth, the constitution of man and the next step ahead. Now, I'm not sure whether this is going to be allowed to me. Yes. Karma, rebirth, the constitution of man and the next step ahead. Are we aware of these factors in our own life? Do we suspect them? Do we have any degree of accuracy in assessing what they are? Probably karma is difficult. Rebirth, we assume. Maybe some memory of past lives evoked by different experiences comes to us. In the new schools, we will be taught how to summon to the surface past lives which are of relevance to the present situation. But karma is difficult. It's very intricate. And that's why, you know, one has to be, in a way, such a mathematician, in the very highest sense of the word, to work as a Lipika Lord or a Maharaja, allocating karma. The Solar Angel is a karmic agent as well. So the law of cause and effect is of far greater importance than the law of rebirth, because it necessitates action upon the part of the aspirant, and that action inevitably conditions the future. There is nothing he can do about the law of rebirth but submit to it and be grateful that apparently that opportunity continues to present itself. It was a modern version of this, quite humorous, with the comedian Bill Murray. It was called Groundhog Day. You know, it's a film that's been around for a little while. And he kept on living through the same day, and opportunity was presented to him constantly until he got it right. So, these are four factors which have to be presented to the one who is discovered or found. Do you know, when you look back at your life, have you been discovered in this way? Or have you become one who is a discoverer, and have you, discovered others and helped to submit them to the proper flow of information, the proper training? As regards the many other adjustments which members of the hierarchy in all their many differing grades will have to make in what might be called their personality, lives, and habits, even though it might be a Maya Virupa, I have not to say. I know well the questions which will arise in your minds, and I would like to touch upon one or two of them. For instance, some of you are asking. They'll probably not be questions which strike upon the most important and relevant factors in the external life of the externalizing masters and initiates. Probably not, but let's see. Number one, how will those members of the hierarchy in their various grades appear on Earth? Will they come through the methods of ordinary birth, of childhood and maturity? Some initiates may follow this ordinary pattern, he says. Some are already passing through it today and are in the stages of infancy and adolescence. To them will be given a large share of the preparatory work. Some will not pass through these relatively limiting phases, but will pass back and forth between the outer world and the world of hierarchical endeavor, you know, being able, let us say, to use the body, the bodies of their disciples at will, because the disciple has achieved a sufficiency of development for that to occur. they will be sometimes present in physical bodies and sometimes not. This method of activity will not be possible as long as the present rule of national and civilian identification of passports and of drastic airport and seaport inspection are required by the authorities. Such people are these transiting initiates would not be able to identify themselves. This form of appearance is therefore postponed for some time. Some of the masters will create what is called in the language of the East, the Maya Virupa, a vehicle of expression which is built of atomic, physical, and astral substance and of concrete mental substance. It's like a personality, but not really. It's not ruled by lunar vehicles, or rather by lunar lords. Their problem is not, therefore, so acute in the matter of appearing and of reappearing, as is that of the initiate who cannot thus create to suit his purpose and his service. So this is one method. How will they live and how will they come and go? And this is offering two types of response. The ordinary process of being born and growing up and taking one's place in society and so forth, but aware perhaps of who one is, and the other for more advanced types, which requires the building of a Maya Virupa. One has to be at least a fourth degree initiate to do that, and preferably, I think, a fifth degree initiate. Maybe it's more common among the fifth degree initiates. So the first type of appearance is relatively limiting. And the second type does not have such limitations. I guess one can appear and disappear at will. We hear stories of Apollonius of Tyana disappearing, vanishing, when the members of a court were trying to apprehend him. We hear stories of the attack of communist China upon the Tibet of the time, and much to the frustration of the soldiers, their targets disappearing before their eyes. So two methods. The more normal method cannot occur as long as we have all of the officialdom surrounding the coming and going, and maybe now it's even worse than it was before, because of the state of high tension and hostility in the world. Okay, another question. Will the members of the hierarchy make their appearance at the same time? I think DK dealt with this already and basically is telling us, you know, certainly not. Certainly not. The appearing of these initiates and masters will begin with isolated members appearing and living among men, coming forth one by one, doing the required work, returning through the portals of apparent death to the inner subjective ashram, and then again appearing by one or other of the methods mentioned above. It's an important statement. It's not like an army arriving at the door, an army of good suddenly appearing and overcoming all of the obstacles set up by the forces of obstruction and human ignorance. Not at all, certainly not, he says. This process has been going on for some time and began around the year 1860, so we have him writing 90 years ahead or after the process had begun. He's writing around 1950 and 1860, 90 years. The work of these disciples in the human consciousness is already being reorganized. And already they have succeeded in changing the consciousness and the thinking of many millions. Their ideas are already permeating world thinking. I would remind you also for your encouragement that I myself am among this number of working initiates, for in the last analysis, that is all that any master is, and that I, from my physical anchorage, i.e. my physical body, and my location in northern India, and in collaborating with the disciple AAB, am also, and also with FB, Foster Bailey, have done much to bring certain concepts, old and yet new, in their presentation to the consciousness of humanity. I have done much to stimulate from latency to potency the instinctual goodwill of men. I mention this, for this is not a unique achievement. There are many other masters who, with their disciples, are to be found today actively functioning in human affairs and struggling under adverse conditions to change the trend of human thinking from a frank materialism to a genuine spiritual aspiration. So DK numbers himself as one of these initiate disciples who has appeared and offered what he could. I guess he knew HPB in the years before he really began to cooperate with her in her writings. And I think when she journeyed to Tibet, she met him and worked with him and maybe planned with him what would be forthcoming. So many millions have been affected by the work that began around the year 1860. Now, you know, what cycle was that? It's not long. Well, let's see, 1875 would be 300 years from the coming in of the second ray. And 1860, just a little short of that, about 285 years, roughly. And there are probably other ways to look at it. 100 years would, let's see, how much would have passed? 85 years since 1775. 60 and 25, 85 years. Anyway, some congruence and overlap of cycles would have to have been responsible. And I suppose also the sixth ray with its kind of 150-year cycle would have been involved. And if we're looking for a 500-year second ray cycle, we would have to take it to 1825, right? 1825, from 1575, then the 1600s, the 1700s, and 1825. That would be the half of the 500-year cycle, and still half a seventh ray cycle away from 1860, a cycle of maybe 70 years. The seventh ray and the first ray correspond, those cycles correspond more to the number itself. 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years, etc., for the first ray cycles, and 7 years, 70 years, 700 years, 7,000 years, etc., for the seventh ray cycle, at least for one of them. But we're told that the seventh ray comes in rapidly on its cycle. Well, anyway, one day we will have all knowledge with respect to these factors, and we'll know much more about why certain years were important for the launching of certain initiatives. But many masters were doing this, and in a sense, it's an answer to certainly not. I mean, these masters have been coming out in small numbers, one at a time, and not as a unique and overpowering force. And DK doesn't really mention who they are, but I think the Master Jesus is one of them, working with the prelates of the High Church. DK is one of them. I wouldn't be surprised who will show up working with their students. I decline to speculate too much here. The general trend, however, is of the hidden appearance, hidden from general sight, of certain masters who do work with their disciples on the outer plane. Okay, going on here, there are many other questions arising in the minds of my readers, and the less advanced they are, the greater the questioning and the greater the emphasis upon the materialistic and therefore non-important aspect of this entire subject. Well, he pretty well says it. If we're interested in how they live as personalities, it does show a materialistic bias. So with them, these types of questions, I have no intention of dealing, though I know well what they are, and so does AAB. They are of no vitality and will answer themselves in due time. We have to continue to remember that phrase regarding how an initiate or master lives. They live with, or in the expression of, sanctified normality. And the very glamorous groups that exaggerate their nature have forgotten that normality. When the task of the preparation of men's minds for is further advanced, and when the knowledge of the existence of the masters and their hierarchical endeavor and of the united hierarchy of our planet are a commonly recognized truth, and when active goodwill is recognized as a real national asset in all lands and furthered by the masters that are in those lands, especially in the planetary centers, then the speed of the externalization of the hierarchy will be greatly increased. Then the five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form. So let's just get this one. We're in the windup here of a very important impartation of information. So for our encouragement again, we look towards the future and the acceleration of the excellent possibilities in the future. But certain recognitions have to occur. The minds have to be prepared. Knowledge about the masters has to be given and broadly accepted. The plan has to be somewhat understood, or at least that there is a plan, and what its foundational tenets might be, and goodwill has to be in action. Then the five spiritual centers will begin to take definite form. Now, some people hope to activate those centers now, and they visit the centers with the intention of activation, but we can see how many preparatory steps must be achieved before the centers will be activated. They will begin to take definite form. Apparently, they had not yet at that time, and one wonders even now whether they have. And not only will they take definite form, they will call also for recognition. The groups they're working will be known, and so far we cannot say that there are hierarchical groups working there that are known. And they will also be in close touch with each other. From that time on, the network of initiates and disciples under the direction of the masters will be worldwide. It's not immediate. And in every field of human expression, the opinion of these men and women and of the masters presiding at the five centers and in their affiliated groups will be regarded as of immense value by all government, economic, and social organizations. Well, that's really an important aspect of this big paragraph. And it shows you how far we are from that state right now. I guess we do not yet have the spiritual centers taking on definite form in a spiritual manner. They are not broadly recognized. The groups working there are not widely known. If there are groups working there, probably they're just beginning. And that close interaction between them has yet to be developed. You know, even to say that we're looking 100 years ahead would be a short time. By that time, the Aquarian age will truly have begun with the alignment of the vernal equinox with the 30th degree of Aquarius, as Master DK tells us. From that time on, the network of initiates and masters will be worldwide. And they are certainly not, at this time, sought out for their thought and opinion, which is regarded as of immense value by governmental, economic, and social organizations. But there is the future. And you can understand why the next 100 years will be so important and how we have to clear away so many of the obstructions, such as are now demonstrating this tendency towards obstruction under Pluto is being dragged to the surface and has to play its part before the Christ will reappear, indicating that humanity in sufficient numbers has taken the first initiation. Then, and this is one of those great paragraphs, right? Then, under a great wave of spiritual inspiration, the divine spirit of expectancy for the reappearance of the Christ will sweep through the world. It will then be regarded as credible and creditable, and his coming will provide the germ for all world hope. The reason for this will be that the most respected, enlightened, and cultured people on the planet will be looking for him. Now, you know, it's one thing for a fanatical devotee to be looking for the return of the Christ in the way it has been envisioned by Christian dogma. And it's another thing for the highest examples of the human race who have contributed so much to the welfare of humanity also to be looking for him. And then, my brothers, he will come, bringing new energies of love and compassion and implementing the spirit of fresh enlightenment. To these important events must also be added the new revelation for which all men wait and to which they will be able to respond, owing to the needed and new stimulation. Well, you know, is there anything more inspiring than such a paragraph, such a notification here? Then, my brothers, he will come, bringing new energies of love and compassion and implementing the spirit of fresh enlightenment. I mean, obviously, the masters have a much greater feel for what this will mean than we can have. But it's inspiring to us, even though our comprehension is less, far less than theirs. So the wisest, the most intelligent, the most humanitarian, the best of human beings will be looking for him. And only when all of these requirements are fulfilled, plus the need for the requisite amount of peace and sharing in peace, and ridding the world of corruption, the most virulent forms of it in the political and religious area, then he can come. But we see, don't we, how very definite the requirements are. And he cannot dare to come before these are in place. I think this is one of the most promising paragraphs we have in the teaching, and it is built up sequentially so we know what must be fulfilled before the great Lord can appear. We're getting there now. Many who are reading this section of my instructions will be disappointed. So futile and silly is the human mind in so many cases, because I do not choose to consider now the means whereby the masters of the hierarchy, members of the hierarchy, will adjust themselves to modern living conditions, as to what food they will eat and whether they will marry or not marry. One thing only I will say, they will take modern life and what it means, and will proceed to demonstrate how that life, the normal product of the evolutionary process, can be lived divinely. Well, that's, you know, more of the idea of sanctified normality. They will not be freakish. They will not be hilarious. We've had some depictions of the masters about which one could say, who would want to follow or cooperate with such childish masters, demanding our salutes and our mantrams spoken in unison, almost like a political rally. Who could be attracted to that type of master, childishly rendered in the pictures of them, with rosy cheeks, as it were? No, we need greater realism concerning who they really are and how they work. And that's one of our great responsibilities, to absorb a realistic view of who they are and how they work, and to impart it in a persuasive manner, a common sense manner, a reasonable manner. Okay, they, the masters, would express the highest ideal of marriage. I would here remind you that many of the masters are married and have raised families, and demonstrate the principle which underlies the perpetuation of the race of men, meaning that they have children as well. They will also show how all life is one life, that the form nature is ever a sacrificial unity in the vast scheme of divine manifestation. They will show us also that whatever we do, whether we eat or drink, all must be done under correct, temperate, and natural law, and in a spirit of loving understanding, and ever to the glory of God. They will express ordered, temperate living in all things, and will demonstrate also the possibility of the existence of people on earth who have no wrong inclinations and no bad qualities in their nature. They will stand forth as living examples of goodwill, of true love, of intelligent applied wisdom, of high good nature and humor, and of normalcy. They may indeed be so normal that recognition of what they are may escape notice. Well, this is a very different picture of the masters than the almost weird and hysterical portrayal that one finds in the beglamored writings of some very enthusiastic devotees who have lost their balance with regard to assessing the spiritual life and the nature of the masters. Now, he says he's not going to get into these things, but in a way, he kind of does. He tells us that some may indeed marry and have children, and they will be temperate and moderate in all things, and they will express divinity in all things, but they will have humor, and they will be seen as normal human beings, which may militate against their being identified concerning what they really are, graduate human beings. They will finally demonstrate to all around them the significance of right motive, the beauty of selfless service, and a vivid intellectual perception. This, my brothers, is such a platitudinous statement from the point of view of the nice, well-meaning person that its value may escape your attention. Yet it is a statement that any initiate will tell you warrants your closest attention and consideration, consideration which must be followed by an effort to express these same qualities upon your way towards the door of initiation. So the imitation of the masters, just like the imitation of Christ, is something we must cultivate. Well, we're just about at the end of what DK could tell us about the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, the nature of the masters and their work. Now, you know, I become aware of how much study this section of the book will really take if we are to deeply absorb what has been imparted. But here are ideal human beings, although they probably could speak to each other of their limitations with respect to higher attainments, but they will have and will demonstrate the significance of right motive, the beauty of selfless service, and a vivid intellectual perception. Now, these factors are discounted by the average individual. They're not glorious enough. They're not glamorous enough. You know, they're not sufficiently awe-inspiring. They're just platitudes, but not really. And he advises us, as any initiate would advise us, to give close attention and consideration to these attainments. And then to do likewise, you know, we might say, we must do likewise, within our within the range of our limitations. Well, the breadth of it all can sweep one away. And to think, you know, in lives to come, and even now, we will be involved in helping this process to be successful, representing a huge change of orientation for humanity as a whole, and especially for certain strata within humanity who have sufficient experience to really understand the spiritual life, but it will be of a benefit to all. It keeps ringing in my ears, this statement And then, my brothers, he will come. But only then. And it's not some set date on the calendar. No. It's not that. It's a condition that humanity has achieved as the macrocosm of the lower kingdoms, and probably, you know, many conditions of which we can know nothing. Now, the last little bit that he writes is about the work of the externalized ashrams. And he says, the barest outline must here suffice, the work of the externalized ashrams. The barest outline must here suffice. I've dealt with the proposed work of the externalized ashrams at some length in the foregoing pages and also in several of my other books, and a more detailed presentation will not be possible at this time, but, you know, we anticipate that a more detailed presentation is coming in this third phase of a series of bridging treatises. It's coming, and we will know more because probably at that time, 1949, much depended on how humanity would respond. And of course, Alice Bailey's health was very precarious, and the 30 years' work, meticulously planned by the Tibetan, was concluding. The approaching externalization will bring about an increased stimulation, which will necessarily affect disciples and aspirants and will involve a period of adjustment to this higher vibration, adjustment to the increased livingness, which will be facilitated by the enunciation of certain basic statements for the guidance of disciples, aspirants, and people of goodwill. So not only is hierarchy experiencing in relation to the inflow of the Shambhala force, great additional stimulation, but the disciples and aspirants such as we are also experiencing a necessary period of adjustment to the higher vibrations. And certain basic statements may help us adjust. So this will involve a period of adjustment to the higher vibration. Maybe, well, many of us don't know what the period of the 1950s offered in terms of vibration. Some of us were in incarnation at that time, but probably rather young. But maybe we can look historically at the progress of culture over a period of 70 years now to 2020, and hopefully 2020 indicating perfect eyesight, see with greater clarity 70 years later. Specifically, the externalized ashrams will be active along four major lines. Okay. And if we want to help, you know, at least this is part of the educational work to help others see this. Number one, creating and vitalizing the new world religion, of which we are sorely in need due to the separative and frictional relations between major world religions and the many sects. Number two, the gradual reorganizing of the social order, an order free from oppression. Look at what the police are doing now. The persecution of minorities and materialism and pride. Well, we're giving tremendous examples of those foibles right now, not only in the United States, but especially in the United States, where the battle for democracy is being fought out. The public inauguration of a system of initiation, this will come a little later, this will involve the growth and comprehension of symbolism. And DK did submit to his trained observers a whole curriculum in interpreting symbolism. So initiation and the ability to interpret symbols, these go hand in hand. And finally, the exoteric training of disciples and of humanity in this new cycle. All right. Some of these happen earlier and some of them later. But we can take them to heart. The New World Religion, the rather Uranian reorganizing of the social order, Aquarius and Libra become so important here. And the cessation of the persecution of minorities. Think of the genocides that are occurring, the attempt to wipe out entire populations which have a certain religion or culture. The rampant materialism and pride having to do with worldly riches. And then come, you know, we can begin working at the vitalizing of the New World Religion, but when the ashrams are externalized, they will bring in the new and universal religion. And when they are externalized, they will help to rid society of basic oppressions and injustices and of a superficial materialism based upon a very wanting sense of values. And false pride based upon identifying as a personality, you know, when the ashrams appear. And then when they appear, and it couldn't be before, the system of initiation, I guess Master R will be involved in helping to set that up, and the Christ will present the first initiation publicly. And then the ongoing training of disciples, even as esoteric schools now and Masonry and the new approach to the church are attempting at this time. But with the presence of the masters externally available, there will be much more rapid progress. Meanwhile, what is it that you, my brothers, must do in this interim period? What is your work and your goal? Let me emphasize one or two points. Well, we all want to know that, you know, how can we work most effectively on behalf of the manifestation of the divine plan. The material goal, which all who love their fellow men and serve the hierarchy must ever have in mind and at heart, is the defeat of totalitarianism. I did not say the defeat of communism, but the defeat of that evil process which involves the imposition of ideas, you know, the church or politics or economics even, and which can be the method of the democracies, a democratic, and which can be the method of the democratic nations and of the churches everywhere, just as much as the method of the USSR, it was that at the time, now it's not. This is totalitarian. It's not that the democracies and the churches are free of it, not by any means. It's the denial of the gifts of our fellow human beings. It is a standardization which Master Moria looks at as dull and lifeless. It does not allow the individual to flower with his or her particular gift to the whole. It's one of the dangers of Aquarius, of course, is a dull standardization. We're all the same here, you know. My friends and I are all alike, and that's the way we like it. So this is called totalitarianism. I would ask you to have this distinction clearly in your mind. Your material goal is the defeat of all that infringes human free will and which keeps humanity in ignorance. It applies equally to any established system, Catholic or Protestant, which imposes its concepts and its will upon its adherents. Totalitarianism is the basis of evil today, depriving humanity of the gifts which are inherent within its inner nature. Totalitarianism is the basis of evil today. This is something that about which we can question ourselves, have we taken it in? It is found in all systems of government or of education. It is found in the home and in the community. I refer not here to the laws which make group relations sound, possible and right. Such laws are essential to community and national well-being and are not totalitarian in nature. They are guidelines for correct functioning, correct action. I refer to the imposition of the will of the few upon the broad mass of people, the defeat of this undesirable tendency everywhere is your definite material goal. So, you know, we cannot say we have not been instructed. And what can people like ourselves do? Well, we can certainly encourage the expression of the gifts of each individual without trying to oppress or suppress that expression. We can value what people have within themselves and encourage its expression. We can do that. the defeat of totalitarianism, found in all schools of thought, in the religious, political, economic, even artistic fields. And you can only imagine what would happen to scientific truth if only certain hypotheses were honored and the experimental method was cast aside. It's found very much in the sixth-ray groups. It's found in seventh-ray groups, which can be addicted to standardization and the imposition of law without justice, not real law at all, but just the ability to contain and suppress originality. It's cutting an individual off from his or her origin, where he is truly archetypally unique. That cannot be allowed. Now, the next is your spiritual goal, is the establishment of the kingdom of God. Well, it's a big goal. One of the first steps towards this is to prepare men's minds to accept the fact that the reappearance of the Christ is imminent. You must tell men everywhere that the masters and their groups of disciples are actively working to bring order out of chaos. You must tell them that there is a plan and that nothing can possibly arrest the working out of that plan. You must tell them, notice the emphasis upon the word tell, impart, communicate, transfer, transmit. You must tell them that the hierarchy stands and that it has stood for thousands of years and is the expression of the accumulated wisdom of the ages. You must tell them, above all, that God is love, that the hierarchy is love, and that Christ is coming because he loves humanity. A great exhortation, a great charge. He leaves us with, in the conclusion of this book, this is the message which you must give at this time. This is the message. I guess, you know, if we're ever flagging in our inspiration, we can come to this page and be re-inspired. Hierarchy works through inspiration and through groups, and there will be times when we need to be re-inspired, of course. This is the message which you must give at this time, and with this responsibility, I leave you. Now, it's a double entendre there. I leave you. Work, my brothers. Well, it will take everything we have to fulfill what Master DK has offered as necessary. And he leaves us with the idea that helps us become the truly working disciple, the truly working initiate. We have in this book so much guidance, and it's a question of not only being familiar with what the guidance is, but of doing it, following it, and not losing time and hours in the way or the ways that he told us they are so often lost there are so many alibis and so much loss of productivity because we indulge our not selves. We indulge the personality, and we do not work to be living souls on the physical plane, not at the point of tension, which must be achieved. I guess work, my brothers, is such an exhortation. And it's an invocation, and it will evoke us if we really care, if we love humanity and the divine plan, and seek to serve the great ones who seek the redemption of humanity. Sometimes Master DK arrives at a point where he says, well, I haven't anything more to say around this subject. If you haven't absorbed it now, nothing more I could say will help you absorb more. No, we have what we need here in this book to orient our service. Each one of us will serve in a different way, according to our abilities and the energies that we appropriate, ray energies, astrological energies, the energies of the creative hierarchies. We will serve accordingly. But we have to make sure that, in fact, we do serve to the limit of our capacity, or at least attempt to, and that will involve sacrifice, and it will be demanding, it will be exacting, and the next years are critical in that regard. Because although the forces of evil have been driven back, there is a new onslaught, and it comes with fear and chaos and materialism, and it has to be reasonably driven back, so people who can think at all will begin to understand the danger and will work for the good. Well, what I'm going to do when the time is right is go back to the beginning of the book where there are some pages which I did not pick up. My eagerness to get into something more current than those earlier essays saw me jump over the first 60 pages or so. And so it will be still a few more days before I can say the book is completed from my own limited point of view. But I'll get into it, and of course, I think we'll find that the beginning of the book deals with seed groups and those specialized centers of force, which are also dealt with in Discipleship in the New Age Volume 1. So it will be very necessary information, and we will deal with it. Okay. I'm afraid that I just... Okay, this is more like... program number 92 is more like 2 hours. And... perhaps a half hour. and it did go up to page 693. And the coming end is also about, this is 2 hours, and approximately 2 hours, and not a half. And this also, program 93, from 693 to the end of the book at 701, is also approximately 2 hours. I'll just have to leave it at that. So this is the end of our work until I can get to the beginning, and hopefully that will be done fairly soon. This is the end of 93. And about 2 hours to page 701, and beginning on program, let's call it 1A. And the date, I don't know, not tonight. And it will be from page XX to June something. And we don't know how long those programs will be. Okay. But anyway, you have enough to work with. Now, of course, the best is simply to read Master D.K. and also to study him topically using the Alice Bailey CD-ROM, which gives a different approach and the possibility of many cross links that may not have occurred to one who is reading horizontally. That's the best. But what I've been trying to do in these commentaries is link various pieces of information up with other pieces of information, and thereby hoping that lines of light appear between the various aspects of the teaching. And of course, you'll have your own interpretation, your own way. And you may differ from what I say, and you may discover my own errors, as certainly there must be errors in what I've said or tried to say. But it should stimulate a kind of whole making out of the great teaching we've been given. And it should stimulate the realization that it's one great teaching and one great book. And the many books are one great book. And then we will be in a position which is more prepared for the coming out of the third installment in this series of bridging treatises by Master D.K., which has yet to be completed. So I take this injunction seriously. Work, my brothers, and I'm sure you do too. The choice of how we work is recommended, but the specifics are up to us. Therefore, let us serve the divine plan and serve those whom the plan serves, and serve those who serve the plan. I'll be back to you before long, and this will be posted on Makara as soon as may be possible. So lots of love, many blessings. Study this material carefully. And meditate on those sections which come to you as hints, which will be of value to you. And of course, you know, continue with your service, because it's in a way the most important thing in preparing over the next 5 years for the great conclave and the actual emergence of more members of the hierarchy. So we'll be seeing you quite soon on number 1A, which is my way of distinguishing it from number 1. And we'll work ahead. And hopefully other books will be able to receive commentary. And we will continue to bring out the wholeness with at least some degree of meticulous entirety. Bye-bye.